Well, it is really good to see you here this morning. My name is Justin. I'm one of the pastors here. And today we get to continue through our series called Don't Waste Your Life. And what we want you to remember is we're calling it Don't Waste Your Life because we don't want to get to the end of our lives and feel like we wasted the whole thing. We want to be able to take a look at the scriptures and see how we can make our lives as meaningful as possible. And so before we get into that, let me tell you a little bit about myself. And that's that I'm not that much different than you. Because when I got into a serious relationship with my now wife, it was just like when you got into one of your serious relationships. And that there was no good reason that could ever get between you and the person that you cared about and the person that you loved. Here's what I mean. Lindsay and I started dating when we were teenagers. And so I had a curfew. And that curfew, you know, I pushed that as far as I possibly could go because I wanted to spend every waking minute with her. There was nothing that could stop me. And so I would push that curfew and I would get there and I would get home the second that minute hit the time that I need to be back home by. And so that was just part of it. Then I can remember driving literally through a blizzard to get to my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, but to get to her. And there no plows, no anything. It was all the snow everywhere. And it didn't matter how dangerous it was. I had to be with her because we were going to sit together. Well, it was snowing out. There was nothing there, right? But I had to be there. And then as we got a little bit older, I actually started working this job. It was a third shift job, and I would go into sleep before I went to work. And so I can remember, though, that Lindsay would ask me, and she'd say, "Hey, can we go to a movie tonight?" And I'd say, "Yeah, no problem. I just have to be up in 4 hours, but let's do that." And so I would make sure to do that, and she'd want to go see. She'd say, "Oh, let's go see this romantic movie, these chick flicks." And I'd say, "Yes, of course, absolutely. I would love to go see those with you." And then we'd get there, and you guys know how expensive the movies are, so I'm shelling this money out there for these tickets. And then she says, "Popcorn." I said, "Of course, popcorn. Let's do it. What else do you want?" There's nothing that could ever get in the way of me spending time with you. And then some of you actually saw these romantic movies, these horrible movies. I never saw them because here's what happened. I would fall asleep every single time because I pushed off all my sleep to spend as much time as I could with her. But see, somewhere we go from this point that no legitimate reason can stop you to any possible reason could get in the way. And here's what I mean. As your relationship grows and it matures, just like Lindsay and I, we grew up and we matured. This actually happened a couple weeks ago. I'm embarrassed to say this, but she asked me, it's very stereotypical. She says, "Hey, can you take the garbage out?" And I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm working. It's late at night, and I said, I got my computer on my lap, and I said, "Hey, I would love to take the garbage out, but I'm too busy. I'm working right now." Well, the 18-year-old version of me would have kicked my butt. It would have taken the garbage out. It would have checked all the garbage in the whole house, and then it would have made sure that was done. All she was asking me to do was take the garbage out, to take 2 minutes from that break, right? To take 2 minutes from that work, to walk outside the door is right on the side of the house, walk up the driveway, which we don't have one of those mile-long driveways. We have a nice short driveway, and to walk back in. But see, I was looking for the excuse. My work, it was my excuse. It was my loophole. And that's what we're going to be focusing on today. Don't waste your life looking for the loophole. See, maybe you are like me. I actually enjoy looking for loopholes. And here's what I mean. If you've ever played a game with me, you probably know this already, but I love to sit back when people are playing games. I love to sit back and I like to look for the fault in the game. I love to look for the fault in everyone else's strategy. And then here's what I do is I swoop in and I take the W every single time. And that's, I love looking for loopholes. But see, where we're going to be, we're going to continue in Matthew chapter 5 where Jesus is talking to the disciples. And he's going to be talking to them about something a lot more serious than garbage and a lot more serious than games. And he is going to be talking to them about their lives and their relationships. And now, students, I know when you saw those words pop up on the board, adultery and divorce, that you started to tune out. And I'm going to ask you, please don't tune out. Please stay focused in on what we're doing here today, because I want you to be able to avoid the complication that some people have to face because they don't know about this ahead of time. So students, stay with us. Excuse me. But here, let's walk through these three terms, right? Adultery, divorce, and breaking your word. And if we take out every single reason that goes along with those, adultery, divorce, and breaking your word, take out the reasoning for why they happen, I want to make sure that before we get into what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 5, that we can be on the same page and that we can set some ground rules. And so when we look at these three things, we can say that all three of these on their own are bad. That every one of us in this room can agree with that. And because here's what we know, that when you are looking into your spouse's eye on your wedding day, and you're looking eye to eye, you don't say, man, this is the best day of my life. I cannot wait until the day that I get to commit adultery. I can't wait till I find out that my spouse has committed adultery against me. In the same way, when you were prepping for that wedding, when you were getting to do all that super fun stuff, at looking at flowers and venues and all the planning, spending time with your in-laws that you love so much or your future in-laws, right? You didn't say, I'm so glad that I've invested so much time in this. I'm so happy that I get to put everything that I have into this because someday I'm going to get married and then someday I'm going to get divorced. No, that's not why we do it, right? And then again, I think everyone here, we don't have to go through all this, but we can all agree that breaking your word is not a good thing. So now that we've established that, now that we're on the same page, let's look and see what Jesus has to say to his disciples. Remember, they're on the side of the mountain. They're sitting there together. He's teaching them. And so we're in Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 27. He says, "You have heard the commandment that says, you must not commit adultery. But I say, anyone who even looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart." So first thing Jesus says is, hey, we're all on the same page. We all know the same law, that same commandment. But then Jesus does something very interesting, and he says that if you've even looked at another person with lust, that you've committed adultery. So what Jesus did there was actually awesome, because what he did is he put all of us in this room on the same page, on even ground, on the same playing field. Now, there might be one of you in this room saying, hey, I've never looked at anyone with lust ever. Well, you know what? Awesome for you, because God has blessed you beyond anything that you could ever imagine, and I hope that you understand that. But for the rest of us in this room, we are all on the same ground. We all have the same sin in our lives now. But what Jesus did even more with this statement is he started to try and reteach the disciples. Because what they had learned, what they had grown up learning, is what the religious leaders of that time had been teaching them. And that is that adultery was simply and only, very specifically, a physically outward act. And Jesus says, no. He says, it's actually a lot more than that. He says, it's something that starts inside of you. It's something that happens inside of your mind. It's something that happens in your spiritual life. It's something that is going on in your heart. And he wants them to know that this, yeah, you've learned this your whole life, but let me reteach you. Let me train your thinking a little bit of a different way. And now that he's done that, he says, let's get into this. He says, so if your eye, even your good eye, so he says, hey, stop making excuses. Stop looking for that loophole. He says, forget about your good eye. Even if your eye causes you to lust, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your hand, even your stronger hand, again, enough with the excuses, even your stronger hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. Now here, let's be clear. Jesus is not advocating for self-mutilation. Not in any way. What he is stressing is that you need to understand so much that this is such a bad thing that you need to do everything to get away from it. That there is an inner cause that is motivating you to commit this sin, and you need to be able to take out every reason for it. And so here he's speaking about adultery. And see, we all have those excuses and those loopholes for why someone might commit adultery. That I feel deserted. I feel abandoned. That I was angry, that I was upset, that I wanted revenge. And Jesus is saying, you need to remove all of that. You need to do so much more. That this is an inside issue, that you need to take care of that before you take care of anything else. And then, maybe some of you have heard this term, spiritual surgery. And what spiritual surgery is, that when you are pursuing a relationship with God, in order to have a healthy relationship with God, that you would be willing to remove parts of your life, aspects of your life, so that you can have that healthy relationship with God. Or maybe it's that you are allowing God to take those aspects of life from you. And you're allowing him to perform spiritual surgery on you. And Jesus is saying that this is exactly what you need to do. You need to allow God, you need to be able to take the steps yourself to remove these parts of your lives so that this adultery, this sin, doesn't creep into your life. And you don't only have to have that healthy relationship and pursue that healthy relationship with God, but that you should be trying to do that same thing with your spouse. Now, why is Jesus stressing this so much? Because it's adultery, right? He's saying that this is so important, and what's happened is that we have completely normalized adultery. That we see our friends go through it, we see our relatives have to experience it, we see it all over TV, and we just throw this language out that this person cheated on this person, and here our reaction is, that's too bad. I feel sorry for them. But we don't understand that God, Jesus, is saying that this should not even be something that we have to deal with, that we should be running from this with everything that we have. That we should be willing to take the most serious approach to this, that we would be willing to remove anything from our lives before we fall into this. And here's why. Because Jesus knows what adultery leads to, and that's what he's going to talk about next, and that is divorce. He says, I know that adultery leads to divorce. And he says, you have heard the law that says a man can divorce his wife by merely giving her a written notice of divorce. Now, at this time, there's two trains of thoughts about divorce, right? There's two groups of people, and they stand on other separate sides from each other. One group of people thinks that a man can divorce his wife at any moment, for any reason, at any time. And all he has to do is hand her this paper saying that we are divorced. The other side of people, they say that there has to be a significant act. In fact, it needs to be that adulterous act, that physically outward act. And it needed to happen, not at any time, but it actually had to happen within the engagement period. It wasn't even when they were actually married. It was in that engagement period. Jesus is saying, hey, I know the law. I understand what you guys understand. He says, but here's what I also understand that you don't get. And what we see, he's not saying it right here specifically, but we see this in Matthew chapter 19. And in Matthew chapter 19, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, are talking to Jesus. They're talking to him about this exact conversation that he's having, and they're trying to trap him into giving an answer that they're not going to like so much. And what happens is, Jesus says, listen, I understand the intent of marriage a little bit better than you do, because Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is God, right? And so he understands the intent of marriage. And he says, I understand that Moses made this law that says that a man can divorce a woman. But I also understand that that law was only put there, that God allowed that law to be there as a concession for your hard hearts. He says that in Matthew chapter 19, verse 8. He says that that's only there as an allowance for your hard hearts. And here's what he meant by that. That at that time, before there was divorce, if a man was wanted to separate with a woman, he'd just kick her out. And then she would have to go from door to door because she had no way to care for herself. And so she would be seeking shelter and care. And as she went from door to door, she would be rejected because people thought that she was just trying to stir trouble up. That they thought she was trying to fool around. That they would label her a harlot. And so because of that, she would never receive the care or the shelter that she needed. So Jesus is saying that, yes, there is this allowance for divorce. But the only reason that God even allowed this is because of your hard hearts, because of your refusal to care for these women. And so now understand that. Here's what Jesus says to the disciples. He says, but I say that a man who divorces his wife, unless she has been unfaithful, causes her to commit adultery. Now, this word unfaithful, this comes from the Greek word porneia, which means unfaithful or sexually immoral. Now, when historians and theologians and people who work with linguistics look at this term of sexually immoral and what it means with this word specifically, it's actually incredibly broad. There's multiple things that fit under there. And so Jesus did this, I think, intentionally, you can partake in these different acts, and that those will lead you to being unfaithful. And so we're not going to get into what all those are. You guys have an idea of what being sexually immoral is. Are you going to allow it to lead you to be unfaithful to your spouse? Now let's go back. Jesus says, I say a man who divorces his wife, unless she has been unfaithful, causes her to commit adultery. Well, wait a minute, Jesus. I don't think that's how adultery works. Isn't adultery when you have a very intimate relationship with someone else? Well, let's keep looking at what he says. He says, and anyone who marries a divorced woman also commits adultery. Well, but if she's already divorced, Jesus, you're not really making any sense here, right? But what we're forgetting is what Jesus had already taught the disciples. And that is that adultery is not only that physically outward act, that there's so much more to it than that physically outward act, that there's something going on inside of you. So now when we go back to Jesus' conversation with the Pharisees in Matthew 19, what happens is Jesus is quoting Genesis, and he talks about that the two were united into one. And then he says, since they are no longer two but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. See, he says, when you do this, this is when you are going to go against God's will and against God's desire, and you are going to create complications. And when you're doing that, when you see, God stuck you together, right? And when we recognize that marriage is a lifelong commitment, and that the two have become one, and God did that with some sort of crazy super glue, right? And when we break that apart, you're working against God. And what's happened is when you break that apart, it's not a clean break. See, sometimes we look at divorce as this clean break because we see it with papers today. And papers are nice and smooth. They got sharp edges. Everything looks so perfect about them. But Jesus says, no, this is not a clean break. This is not a clean separation at all. And so when you divorce, a part of you is now forever with your ex, and a part of your ex now comes with you everywhere that you go. And so when he says that when you marry a divorced person that you are committing adultery, it's because a part of that ex is with you in your new marriage. And I know that's not fun to hear. I know that doesn't make you feel good about where you're at sometimes. But that is what Jesus is pointing to, that a part of that first marriage will always be with you in your second marriage. And I don't think that there's anyone who is in a second marriage or a third marriage that would say that there is no complications that come from their first marriage, that there's no complication that comes from their previous marriages. And that's exactly what Jesus is pointing at. He says, let no one split apart what God has joined together. Andy Stanley, who is a pastor in Atlanta, Georgia, he says it like this. He says, don't attempt to un-one what God has made one. Don't attempt to un-one what God has made one. He says, don't make this more complicated than it needs to be. Don't work against God. And again, these loopholes start to creep in. We start to look for them and we say, well, you know what? We got married way too young. We didn't know what we were doing. And now that I'm divorced and I'm looking for my second marriage, we say that I just need companionship. I just need someone with me. I just need someone to care for me. And those might be valid reasons. But Jesus is saying that you are still going to have to deal with the complications that come from the act when you unwind what God had made one, when you separate what God had united into one. He says that there's going to be effects that happen from that, and you're going to have to deal with those effects. See, Jesus wants us to be completely committed to each other. He wants us, remember, we've said this a few times, it is a lifelong commitment. And so as we continue in Matthew chapter 5, what we'd see is that Jesus is talking to them. He says, listen, let's talk about divorce. You know, we're talking about adultery and then divorce, but let's go back even before that. If we solve the problem before that, here's what it comes down to. When you are making promises to each other, when you are making your vows, are you putting, and he's asking, he's saying that you guys put qualifying statements on everything that you say. You put an excuse in the vows and the promises that you make. You put a loophole in your vows. He says, stop doing that. He says, instead, just say a simple, yes, I will. Or no, I won't. He says, be committed to your answer. Be committed to each other in the same way that God wants us to be committed to Him. But here's what I love about this too. Liz, don't you love it when someone gives you a straight answer? Don't you? Isn't that like the best feeling ever? When you ask someone to help you, and instead of them dragging you on for a week at a time before they actually give you the answer, and they say, oh, maybe I can't. And you know the whole time that they're going to say no. But they keep dragging it on and on, and then you get stuck because now it's the day before you actually need something or the day before this project actually comes up. If they just told you no right from the beginning, wouldn't you feel so much better about it? And see, this is what Jesus is saying that we need to do in our relationships. That when you start your marriage, you need to say, yes, I am committed, or no, I'm not. And you need to stay away from that marriage then. And then this is, honestly, this was hard, right? Anything beyond this is from the evil one. When I read that, I'll tell you what, I felt convicted in that moment because I know that there are times where I haven't been completely forthright. I know that there are times where I just haven't had said a simple yes or a simple no. And Jesus is saying that that's not from God. In fact, that's from the opposite of God, that's from the evil one. He says, just be committed, say yes or no. See, and what he's getting at is that if we can do that at the beginning of these marriages, at the beginning of these relationships, it's going to save us a whole lot of complication the further we get into it. Now, we could talk about this for a long time. There is so much in these verses. But here is something that I want to make sure that you understand today, is that Jesus didn't come to condemn. He came to restore. Jesus didn't come to condemn. He came to restore. In fact, John says this. A lot of you are so familiar with John 3:16, but right after that it says, "For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved." And so our purpose this morning, if you've been in an adulterous relationship, or if you have been divorced in a way that God wouldn't approve of, or in a second marriage, our purpose is not to condemn you, but to help you understand that there is going to be complications when you work against God. And see, no church should be a condemning church, because if Jesus didn't come to condemn, then why should the church ever be condemning? But John didn't just say this. He backed it up by showing Jesus' life. Because we see in John chapter 4 that Jesus didn't condemn when he had the opportunity to. When he met the woman at the well and he's talking to her and she says, "I'm not married." He says, "Yeah, you're right, you're not married. But you've been married 5 times, right?" And he says, right there, Jesus could have come down on her. He could have given her all sorts of trouble. But he didn't. What did he do? He revealed himself to her as the Messiah. He restored her relationship with God to the point that she went back to her hometown and started telling everyone about it and sharing the good news of Jesus with other people. And then in John chapter 8, we see the same thing, that this woman that was literally caught in adultery, and Jesus shows up and they're saying, "Hey, this is what the law says." And he says, "I understand what the law says." He says, "But if you don't have sin in your life, then why don't you throw the first stone?" And what happens? No one throws anything, right? This woman is set free. Jesus didn't come to condemn. He came to restore. And see, we let our sin condemn us. And it is condemning if we don't allow Jesus in our lives. But we have to get back to this point. Stop looking for the loophole in everything. Stop trying to make an excuse for our sins. Because here's where I want to end. That the recognition of your sin leads to an understanding of your freedom. And here's what I mean by that. Because a lot of times when we see our sin, what happens? We get defensive. We get upset, especially if someone points out your sin to you. Oh my goodness, you get angry, right? When someone says, "Hey, you sin like," and you come at me, right? And you get really upset about it. Or when we see our own sin, we justify it, right? And we'll say, "Well, you know what, sin when that person does it like that. But when I do it like this, that's actually not sin." And we try and create some kind of excuse, some sort of reasoning, some sort of loophole for why our sin is not sin. When we see our sin, we get upset. We get sad. Well, why does all that happen? And here's what it comes down to, is that we become ashamed of our sin. And what I want to ask you to do today is kind of work against that. And not to become ashamed of your sin, but to recognize your sin. Because your sin, whether that's adultery, whether that's divorce in the way that God wouldn't want, whether that's a second marriage, whether it's something completely different that we didn't talk about today, the sin that we all have, you heard Maggie say it, we talked about it at the beginning of today, that we all have this sin. Well, that sin has created a distance between us and God. But Jesus came to bridge that gap. And when you recognize that sin in your life, well, that's when you start to understand how big that bridge was. Because for me, I know that my bridge, the bridge that Jesus came to lay down in my life to bring me back to God, would reach from here to Europe and then around the world a few more times probably. And when you can understand that, it makes your story exciting. It gives you passion and excitement about what God can do in your life, but in what He can do in the lives around you. But when we hide our sin, when we try and act like we're better than everything and we're better than everyone and that we don't have that in our lives, well, honestly, I think that diminishes what Jesus has done for us. And so I want to ask you not to be ashamed of your sin, not to try and hide it, but to embrace it. And to know that Jesus has given you freedom. And I want you to gain a complete understanding of that freedom. So let's wrap up with some next steps. Maybe for you, there are decisions that you've made in your life that have created that distance between you and God. And would you take some time today, whether that's right now, maybe after the service is done today, maybe it's tonight when you have some time alone where you can just be with God, but would you ask God, would you ask Jesus to come into your life and to just bridge that gap? Would you ask Him for the grace that only He can give you? Because here's what we know, right? That sin complicates. And so if you have had a relationship where you've suffered from adultery, or if you are in that divorce that maybe didn't work out the way that you wanted to, or maybe you're in that remarriage and part of your ex is with you now and part of you is still with your ex and it's complicated, would you ask Jesus for His grace in that moment? Would you ask Him to say, Jesus, this is complicated. I don't know what to do. I don't know what's coming next, but I know that I'm ready to go forward. I know that I'm ready to be committed. And so, yes, this is my second marriage. Yes, this is my third marriage. Yes, this is something completely separate from what we've talked about today, but that I'm committed. But I need Your grace to help me get through the complication of it all. And then for others of you, maybe you're like me, and you like to make loopholes for everything. You like to make excuses. And this week, will you just take some time and figure out what area of your life that you are repeatedly doing that in? Is it in your marriage? Maybe it's in your parenting. Maybe it's at school. Maybe it's at work. Maybe it's with your friends. But can you find that area, that one area that you make excuses at, that you look for loopholes in more than any other area of your life? And then can you make that commitment to say that I want to stop doing it? Will you just make it so that your life goes forward as a simple yes or no? Let's pray. Jesus, we thank You for the freedom that exists in You, the freedom that can only come from You. And so we know that our lives get complicated, but we also know that that complication comes from our actions and not from You. And so we're asking for Your grace to come into our lives. We are inviting You into our lives in this moment to free us from that complication so that we can be committed to You, that we can be committed to the relationships that we have. So that way, we can be excited about what You're doing in our lives and we can begin to share You with other people. We pray this in Your name, Jesus. Amen.